Welcome to Lives of Pitch, the podcast where we pitch the best films that'll never get made. I'm Matt Turner.
And I'm Tom McGrath. And the game goes like this. We ask you, our devoted listeners, to come up with titles that you'd like to hear us pitch.
We then collaborate, coming up with story points, casting, and even marketing strategies.
Without further ado, this week's title is... My Husband, the Insulation Golem.
The Insulation Golem?
Yeah.
Okay.
Is that... Okay, so we're going for itchy movies.
Yeah, we've asked for itchy movies, whatever that means.
This is our month of wild, wacky genres.
I'm going to be doing it for the next year.
The rest of time. Yeah. So this week, it was a close one, but this week we're going for itchy movies. And... I can understand sort of fiberglass.
Yeah.
Sort of itchy.
Like the builder's foam.
Yeah.
No, not builder's foam, the stuff in
the
your attic.
Insulation foam. Yeah, I know the stuff you're talking about.
Yeah, the sort of, it looked like tribbles from Star Trek.
Okay.
My husband,
the insulation golem.
Yeah, that title from My Waste of Talent. He got in touch with us on Twitter at Life's a Pitch Show. You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/ Life's a Pitch Podcast. Give us a like and give us a follow on those things.
Yeah.
And I post up the genres every week. If you want to give us titles any time of the week, you can. But the genres go up on Friday, Saturday, Sunday, sometime during the weekend.
Excellent. Our guest this week from the Plot Bubble Network is Patrick Lickman. How are you doing, Patrick?
I'm doing all right. I'm excited to talk about insulation.
Yeah, it's going to be a good one.
I think I'm going to become very uncomfortable during this podcast because itchy films.
Is like, it one of your sort of like...
Well, even the word itchy is it does a little bit unpleasantness for me.
We shouldn't have done this one coming straight off Halloween, really.
Yeah,
this may end up being the scariest of them all.
People may have finally a visceral reaction to our podcast after a month of horror movies.
just not the right one.
I just want the listeners to consider the fact that we are currently inside their ears.
Ooh.
Also, your skeleton is inside you.
Yeah, but your skeleton doesn't get itchy.
But you're also trapped inside your skeleton.
What if your skeleton got itchy? I'm pitching that as a movie. You got an itch in your bones.
Itch in your bones. I'm itching in my bones.
What an unpleasant episode of the podcast.
Get your two ribs and scratch it.
Run your nails.
That's quite enough of some nail files. No, it's so unpleasant.
Itching.
should we do some honorable mentions?
Yeah, let's do some scratching, itching honorable mentions. From Connor Lavelle, we've got The Moon Itches.
This has got to be about a space... Like, we've got to get to the moon before it scratches. Because if the moon scratches, it will tear bits of rock off itself.
Yeah.
Or fly to... It's like a disaster movie.
Oh, yeah. Is this set in a world where the moon is anthropomorphized?
No. No.
It kind of has to be.
But not anthropomorphized. I kind of just want it to be sort of, we recently found out that the moon is a being. Like, it's got, like, sort of not arms and legs.
No, I've got a better opening for this.
In fact, we recently found out that the moon is the bald head, a white head of a man with his arms and legs and torso facing always away from Earth.
No.
So you can't see them.
And we've only just discovered it.
Yeah.
No. I've got a better opening for
set
this.
Set in the 50s.
It's a conspiracy.
It is made, this film produced and made by DreamWorks.
Not again.
Okay.
Not the DreamWorks fishing child.
Yeah, so he's up there, the DreamWorks fishing child. I'm really itchy, guys.
And he's fishing, right?
Yeah,
can't let go.
He's holding this thing. And if he lets go of his fishing rod, it will fall to Earth and crush something.
Oh, wait.
So it's a short film then about him. It's a Pixar short about the DreamWorks kid.
It's Pixar propaganda. About how shit the DreamWorks fishing kid is.
The DreamWorks fishing kid is like fucking hell, I'm really itching. I've really got to scratch my
and
back.
He looks down below where he can see people on Earth who are also itchy, but they're just scratching. Yeah. It's very satisfying.
It's like, oh,
I can't do it. I have to hold this fishing rod. It's contractual.
But then like NASA sends a spaceship to come up and scratch him.
Yeah.
So it's a happy ending.
It's
NASA.
Bruce Willis goes up, and they're like, if you don't go, it might be a suicide mission. But if you don't get up to the moon and scratch the DreamWorks kid, thousands are gonna die.
Yeah, he's gonna drop.
Deep Impact, is that the one?
No, that's Armageddon.
Armageddon.
Deep Impact is the other one.
They're the same fucking.
They're the same film. Yeah, for sure.
Deep Armageddon.
So Bruce Willis comes and saves the day, helps the child, but I think, like I say, it's Pixar propaganda. I think NASA is an allegory for Pixar bailing DreamWorks out of the animation
constantly,
industry.
Animation would have died without Pixar.
Yeah, the itching is animation. Yeah.
Wait, that's a bold statement. Animation would have died without Pixar.
Yeah, there would be no animated films.
After Shrek 3... there was a serious issue.
Yeah.
Decline.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, the itch, sort of, the mark of the itch looks a little bit like Shrek.
Yeah.
It's not subtle. The propaganda is not subtle at all.
Little Shrek-shaped
The itch on the back of the DreamWorks kid is just Shrek going, donkey!
Over and over, that's all he says.
Donkey! I've got to scratch that fucking itch. It's really, really annoying me.
We get Mike Myers in for, just
to say, no, we just cut it from other films.
I guess, we'd have to pay him.
DreamWorks kid has a donkey on his back.
Yeah. But if he drops that rod, that's it for Planet Earth.
Why can't he drop the rod? What's the problem?
Because
it's made of moon material.
Right, no. Right. If that kid, right, isn't actually in the moon, that fishing rod is going to wipe
enormous.
Out the planet Earth.
It's a huge fishing rod. Okay.
If he drops it into
the size of the kid in relation to the moon.
I guess, I assumed it was a perspective trick.
There's a hole in that
moon.
If that kid drops the fishing rod, like, if he drops it in the sea, right?
Tsunamis,
everything. If he drops it on the land, that's it.
Does every film we make involving the moon turn out to be the DreamWorks kid?
That's a good bit.
Good bet.
All right. Anyway, Bruce Willis gets a giant...
Bruce Willis was on his way up.
Giant crowbar and just levers Donkey and Shrek off the back of off the back of DreamWorks.
But then I think what he does is as he's doing it, he's got his own ambitions. Seeded earlier in the film, don't worry about it.
What kind of ambitions?
He steals the fishing rod from the kid and kicks him off the moon and becomes
the new moon boy.
Every DreamWorks movie from then on has Bruce Willis.
But you don't really notice it because it's just a silhouette anyway.
Yeah,
so it's like,
it's subtle.
But like, you're kind of watching it, you're like, is that Bruce? No. No.
Why would Bruce Willis be? Oh.
You're just in the background, you just. It was yippee-ki-yay,
motherfucker. It was a coup. The whole movie was actually a coup to take the. To install a new fishing boy into the.
Install a new fishing boy in Bruce Willis.
Still a new fishing boy.
Pixar, bastards. You don't know what lengths I'll go to.
That'd be a great job vacancy.
No! Oh my god, Pixar! This is a conspiracy by Pixar.
Yeah.
To upset the power structure of DreamWorks by
Bruce Willis is working for Pixar. Yeah.
We're going to take out the top of the top, the guy in charge of every decision, the guy... fishing in the moon in the DreamWorks logo.
The CEO for DreamWorks is the kid in the moon.
You take out the DreamWorks kid, you take out DreamWorks. It's like corporate espionage fucking... Oh my god.
And there's an executive in the Pixar board while they're having this meeting who's played by like Neil Patrick Harris or something, and he's like, but why don't we just like make better movies? No! We must take out the Pixar draft. Fuck. We must take out the DreamWorks
boy. In the meantime, Bruce Willis's best friend, Neil Patrick Harris.
Yeah.
Because remember, Bruce Willis ostensibly works for DreamWorks. They're sending him up there, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But he's NASA. He's an inside agent. He's a NASA quadrant of DreamWorks, right?
Yeah.
And how they've got to have a space department.
Otherwise, how do they get him up there in the first place? It's just logical sense.
But Neil Patrick Harris is like trying to fight off aggressive advances by Pixar. This isn't Pixar propaganda. Trying to fight off aggressive advances of Pixar to try and take over DreamWorks.
Oh, Pixar are the bad guy.
Yeah, DreamWorks is the underdog, and then the heel turn at the end is the Pixar agent, the whole time. Yeah.
Oh no.
I mean, Pixar's got a very, very good track record, really. I mean, the amount of times that Lamp has stomped on an innocent eye.
How dare!
Isn't that a ball?
It's a ball.
No, it's an eye. It jumps on the eye.
Oh yeah, you mean the letter I?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
With a ball on top as the I.
No,
no,
no. He just stomps on the I. You're getting the opening to Pixar films and the short film Luxo Jr.
Well, yeah, the movie ends with Neil Patrick Harris.
Luxo Jr.
Yeah, Luxo Jr. is the short film in which there's a big lamp and a little lamp, and it stands on the ball.
The movie ends with Neil Patrick Harris declaring...
jumping on a ball.
Declaring war against the Pixar lamp. He's decided that...
Pixar lamp acts much like a tripod from War of the Worlds. It just comes out of the... breaks out of the studio and starts melting people with its beam of light.
No, I feel like the end of the... The end twist and the just before end credits. Don't worry about that, right? The whole beam of light tripod thing. All you need is everyone's like, oh, thank God, he must have succeeded at doing it. Look, the Pixar kid isn't wriggling around, and the DreamWorks kid isn't wriggling around and itching anymore. He's fine. He must have succeeded. We'll expect him back on the rocket home, and then. Because you know it's a silhouette. The Pixar lamp turns, this giant Pixar lamp on the skyline turns around to face the moon, and there's Bruce Willis smiling down. And
the Pixar lamp's like, something's not right.
Oh my god, that was terrifying.
That's really scary.
No, it's just.
Shines it up on the moon. Bruce Willis looks down as E.T. flies in the moon.
Man, this movie is so nostalgic. I love
it. Oh, God.
Yeah.
But the lamp is also one of the searchlights from the 20th Century Fox.
We're not doing this again. Right.
And we zoom out and the universal letters go in front of the Earth.
We've done this before. It's too much.
It wasn't actually a short at the beginning of the film. It was just a really elaborate title sequence with all the logos of the studios that were involved.
Starring Bruce Willis.
Only. Yeah. Bruce. Oh, and Neil Patrick Harris.
It's a 10-minute title sequence to an unrelated film.
Yeah. The moon itches, guys, so what are we going to do?
It's the logo cinematic universe.
So what happens in the moon itches?
Yeah. The moon's got... it will go back to your idea. No, I'm joking. So from Tomasz Chodakowski, we've got Sam Neill thwarts a biological threat. Also monkeys.
That's not a title.
The name of the film.
That's not a title.
Yeah, it is. He's given us it as a title.
Did he not want to give us that as a 140 character pitch? Or?
No.
Okay, right. Ticks. Right. The biological threat.
Yeah.
Ticks. Also monkeys. What do monkeys do? They eat ticks off each other.
Yeah.
Literally, the whole thing is Sam Neill is a is a zookeeper.
Yeah.
Who specializes in studying the kind of bonding habits of monkeys eating ticks and stuff.
Sure.
And then this species of tick comes out of, I don't know, some rainforest somewhere, and it's giving people horrendous disease.
Mm.
And I think we've got to make them scary somehow, so they burrow under your skin.
Oh, it's lots of really close up shots, like CG, it looks like it's close up.
And you can see them crawling around under your skin.
Like, Omigilili from The Mummy.
Yes, exactly.
Where he gets that scarab beetle in his skin. Yeah, and he's like, ah!
But it comes, they live. Here's the Stephen King scary part.
Oh.
They live on, like, in the circuitry of phones. Like, wait, that's well, how.
Yeah, that is very, very Stephen King-y,
it's a parable.
Why?
Because, right, this... I'll tell you why.
Tell us why.
Because...
How much cocaine
rainforest...
were you doing today, Stephen King?
All of it.
In
all
the rainforest... Not anymore. In the rainforest... that is, they found.
Then
this,
he doesn't have an excuse.
They found this abundance of this mine for the things they need to make phones.
Okay.
Right.
They call it the phone mine.
Phonium.
Phones use a lot of rare elements, right?
Yeah,
that's why like we're running out of them.
But they find a cavern in which everything that's needed to make phones is in the rocks.
Exactly. But above that, there's the jungle, right?
Yeah.
So this phone factory's just been made in the jungle. There's no, don't need to ship anything anywhere.
So all the ticks are grabbing onto these phones.
Grabbing the phones.
Yeah.
As they're being shipped out. And then they've been transported everywhere around the world. And they're burrowing in under people's skin and into their ears as well.
Get into their ears.
Yeah.
The tagline of the movie is, it's a jungle out there.
Isn't that Jumanji? I'm pretty sure that's the tagline of Jumanji.
Fucking Jumanji. Always cutting off my shit.
Yeah, Sam Neill's.
Every time I've tried to invent a concept for a movie, it always ends up with Jumanji.
It's fucking Jumanji.
It's so weird because it's really specific as well. But every single time, it just like tricks me into
I'm
it.
I'm thinking
always
it's
Jumanji.
A film where Sam Neill goes around going, "Give me your phones! Give me your phones!"
Oh, yeah. And then
he starts burning people's phones
in a
giant bonfire in Trafalgar Square.
And then there's a board game. And they play the game, and then it starts coming to. Oh shit! God
Again.
Damn it! I can't help myself. I'm so sorry.
The answer is to get every zoo in the nation to release their monkeys so that they all pick all these ticks off people when they eat them.
All right, cool. I forgot there was monkeys involved.
Yeah.
I did like the bonfire in Trafalgar Square of mobile phone.
I mean, we can
sorry,
do both.
You've got to have monkeys involved.
We certainly we did set up the monkeys in Act One.
Yeah.
They think the way to solve the problem is to have a massive bonfire in Trafalgar Square where they burn everyone's phones. It doesn't work.
Because
but then they release the monkeys.
Because then the ticks are in the air.
Yeah.
Well, the ticks are already on people.
Yeah.
Like, it's too late.
Yeah. They're trying.
They think this illness is caused by the phones themselves. This new brand of phone that comes from the rainforest, right?
Mm.
But the truth is, it's too late. You've already used it. Ticks are already in, right?
Mm. The Amazon phone.
Michael Douglas plays like the CEO of the phone company, and there's only one thing that matters, and it's my profits.
Yes, exactly. Mm. It is his profits. And then there's also a...
Sam Neill slaps him at the end or something.
I've got a lot of people in a room that can tell the future. It's my prophets.
Whereas,
Jesus.
Whereas Roger
he's one of them.
Roger Allam is playing a rabble-rousing politician or broadcaster.
Is that who Roger Allam is playing?
I'll tell you what we need to do. We need to make a giant bonfire in Trafalgar Square and dump all these bloody phones onto the bonfire.
Well, I'll tell you what we need to do, and it's
what
not
if,
that.
What
I'll tell
if,
you what I know.
Tell you what I know.
These ticks are coming from mobile phones.
Do you know what? You want to know what I think? Well, you're listening to me, so I assume that you do.
Roger Allam, the guy from V for Vendetta.
Yeah, the announcer from V for Vendetta.
I love Roger Allam. He's
great. And he's CEO in Speed Racer.
Speed Racer and what's his name? He's in the first episode of Game of Thrones and then never again.
He's in one episode.
Yeah.
He's in the first episode.
He's the guy who...
He talks to Daenerys and her brother and that's
Roger
it.
I really like Roger Allam. Anyway, so he's like we've got to burn him in the middle of a Trafalgar Square.
He's the MP for Trafalgar.
Yeah.
and then Sam Neill is like, no,
only make them stronger somehow.
You should have listened to me. Now everyone's going to die.
I have a question.
And then he releases the monkeys.
Who's Sam Neill?
Sam Neill is Alan Grant from Jurassic Park.
Now, which one is Jurassic Park?
Which one is Jurassic Park?
That's,
right,
the, that's the one with the board game where it comes to life, right?
No, no, oh, no,
shit.
No.
It's the one next to Triassic Park.
Just before...
Oh,
go
shit.
On. Sorry, just before what?
Oh, God.
After Triassic Park, but just before...
Neolithic Park.
Carnivorous Park?
It's my favourite park.
Just clutching at straws there. But, yeah, he's the main guy from Jurassic Park.
Sure.
Yeah.
There you go.
There you go. He just releases the monkeys. Roger Allam gets ripped apart by monkeys.
Thrown in his own fire.
Oh, yeah.
The hubris.
Yeah. The...
I know, because... he trips and falls in his own fire.
When you said he gets thrown in his own fire, I immediately went to, oh, people just mistake him for a foam.
Again, seeded early in the movie, Roger Allam says to one of his aides, yes, you know, people often mistake me for a phone.
Right, this is a little convoluted, but bear with me, right? The reason you can't burn the phones is because the ticks are attracted to the elements in them, right?
Yeah.
So if you burn the phones, it goes into smoke, and then the ticks will all get drawn out of people, and the people who have all these ticks under their skin will
bursting
explode,
out.
Right?
Oh.
So... Roger Allam is stood above this fire in full force of the smoke from these phones coming up towards him, right?
Look at my Trafalgar fire!
And all these ticks fly out of other people and onto him, making him look like a giant phone, and someone picks him up and throws him in.
Yeah. I mean, why did you have to explain it? I just like the fact that people just mistook him for a phone.
No. I mean, that was a good joke.
That is a long, long, long explanation.
I had to make it work. Sorry.
It works. What happens to Michael? What happens to Michael Douglas at the end of the movie?
Dies.
What? How?
Trips and falls on his own shears.
Right, okay, yeah, fair enough. Let's move on.
Yeah, okay. Roll credits.
I mean, we had to explain why people mistook Roger Allam for a phone, but he's tripping up on his own shears. That's fine.
Can we get that title again? What was that called?
That was Sam Neill Fort's A Biological Threat, also Monkeys.
Yep.
Yeah. Thanks, Tomasz Jodorowsky.
Can I be honest with you guys?
Yeah.
I forgot who Michael Douglas was or what character they were playing.
Michael Douglas was mentioned once, and I can't believe you didn't immediately commit it to memory. I made him the CEO of the phone company and then never mentioned him again.
Yeah. Falls on his own shears. So he's just trimming his hedges. Like, oh yes, I've had a wonderful weekend.
Falls down his own mine, I don't know.
No, I just love, like, after credits scene of him trimming his hedges. Anyway, I've had an amazing weekend.
This is my favourite method of death ever since Hot Fuzz.
Oh, dear.
Okay, so that was it.
Hooray!
Yeah.
Hooray. We've got some awards to give out.
Yes.
As always.
Do I get one?
No. The Yes, Very Clever Award this week goes to Sarah Harrison, and she gave us the Xmasist.
Yes, very clever. Very clever.
And the winner this week for our 100 picture film in 140 characters is Dwatg. Don't Worry About the Government podcast. We post a competition up every week to pitch a film in 140 characters, give you a title, we switch it up. Life's a switch up is what we're going to be calling it.
Life's a switch up.
So this week the title was Wolf Bigots.
Wolf Bigots?
Wolf Bigots. And the winner is Don't Worry About the Government podcast at Dwatg, and he's given us the pitch. Sir Patrick Stewart and Ian McKellen voice elder wolves that don't like coyotes joining den. Coyotes save Ian from fall. Pat censors funny business.
Censors funny business. I think I like the other one better.
Yeah.
The other one that Dwatg said.
Well, I think Dwatg is the only one who's... Because I wrote it last night. The other one from Dwatg was Millie Bobby Brown voicing a wolf finds a werewolf, Emma Watson, and they debate if a were is truly a wolf. they seek a wise owl to find answers.
That's my favourite.
They both have third act problems.
It makes me think of like
seek a wise owl. That's a good thing.
The second one smacks slightly of like white saviours. Like the owl swoops in to save the problem. He's not a wolf.
The Deus Ex Machina.
Yeah, the owl Ex Machina. It doesn't work.
I just love Pat Sensor's funny business. It's main pitch time, bitches.
Pitches.
Pitch a film, mainly.
We can do other things, but mainly pitch film.
Mainly pitch film. I mean, that's kind of the show summed up,
mainly
right?
Mainly pitch film, yeah.
So, yeah, thanks everyone who got in touch with us this week on facebook.com/Life's a Pitch Podcast and Twitter at Life's a Pitch Show. If you're listening, want to give us a title or just hear from us, really. Like, we post up things on those things.
It's nice to stay in touch with the people who listen to the show. If you're enjoying it, you can always go ahead and tell your friends about it. Mm. We don't advertise anywhere. We don't have any method of really spreading this this any further than it is. So it's up to our listeners who enjoy it to tell their friends and spread it by word of mouth, really. And if you really enjoy the show, then why not head over to patreon.com/Life's a Pitch Podcast to pop a little bit of monetary restitution? Mm. What do you call it?
Loaded word.
Monetary retribution.
Monetary redemption.
Money.
Monetary reimbursement.
No, because they haven't paid anything. Oh, yeah, you haven't paid anything to them.
Well, we paid them our time and our talent.
If you would like to reimburse that talent.
Why not?
Why was there no inverted commas around talent?
Why not?
What are you doing?
Why not head over to patreon.com/Life's a Pitch Podcast to help us keep this thing going, keep the lights on, and keep us upgrading our equipment and getting people here and doing things and making more ambitious stuff if you want to hear more from us.
Mm. Yeah, like these people have. That is Joe Hegarty, Brent Black, My Waste of Talent, Brandon Spanky Mills, Ross_Originals.
And Justice Mole.
Justice Mole. Thank you for your patronage, guys.
Your patronage.
Your patronage. So if you want your name in that list, get down to patreon.com/Life's a Pitch Podcast where you can find a lot of other stuff that you can get for your money.
Some cool bonus bits and bobs, but mainly just help us keep the lights on.
Yeah. So this week's title from My Waste of Talent is My Husband the Insulation Golem.
Okay.
Alright.
So we've got another Monster Wife movie, but not
Monster Husband movie this time.
Let's establish a genre first and foremost. Okay.
Monster Spouse.
Monster Spouse.
Is it horror? Is it scary?
No, it's a genre itself.
it's a genre we've made up.
Yeah. Monster Spouse.
All right.
Monster Spouse movie.
Okay. So it's sort of a cross between rom-com, drama, and horror, I would say.
Okay.
Sometimes with a sci-fi bent.
I'm thinking it's not about the main character isn't the wife. It's the couple.
Husband.
No, it's the couple that come in for tea one day.
Oh,
it's like,
right.
Where's your husband? And then you just hear a lot of banging in the attic.
Oh, no. Yeah, well, I feel like, okay, whenever the husband has to kind of show their face, this insertion golem.
Yeah.
The house starts getting real cold.
And too cold.
A draft comes through every time he walks into a room.
Yeah, yeah. But once he's there, that room's real warm.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the couple who are coming over for tea, played by Jason Bateman and Emma Stone. Is she too young?
No. Jason Bateman and Jason Sudeikis.
Okay, sure.
Jason Bateman and Jason Sudeikis. The two Jasons.
Two Jasons.
So Jason Sudeikis works as an insurance salesman.
Yeah.
The Argonauts.
All right.
Yeah. Jason Argonaut and Jason Argonaut.
Yeah, yeah.
Jason Sudeikis is an insurance salesman. Jason Bateman is a columnist. He writes for the New York Times.
Okay, absolutely.
And it's an upper class neighborhood, and they are new neighbors because these two, i.e. the woman and the insulation golem, have just moved in.
I think the Jasons are.
Oh, the Jasons and the new
moves. They've moved in adjacent to.
And in fact, it's weird because this neighborhood, it's an old neighborhood. There's these houses and then quite a big gap.
Yeah.
And then, they're at the end of this cul-de-sac on their own. These two houses, quite close to each other, and there's a big gap. And then the rest of the houses start. So they're like their only neighbours. They're only close neighbours. Obviously, they've got a neighbourhood around them. Yeah. But it's this weird sort of like, the land on one side used to be one thing and now it's not anymore. And the land on the other side, it's not really attached to anywhere.
Detached from... they're in a detached house.
Yeah.
Detached from the rest of the community on the street.
Yeah, kind
of
yeah, absolutely.
But it's just these two. Okay, okay.
So is it Jason... Is it the Argonauts that have...
Yeah, Jason.
Come in,
the Jasons have moved in.
Yeah, that have moved in, and they've seen the woman
wife played by
Natalie Dormer.
I was going to say Natalie Portman.
Ooh,
what's she up to? What's Natalie Portman doing?
Have you got another Natalie you want to throw into the ring?
Yeah, Imbruglia.
Natalie Imbruglia. Natalie Imbruglia. She's been in films before, right?
Nope.
Johnny English.
Oh, she?
Yeah, she was in Johnny English.
Okay.
Oh God. Can anyone do a Natalie Imbruglia impression?
Yeah.
Hello. I'm Natalie Imbruglia.
The spot on Natalie Imbruglia.
Yeah. Perfect. I can't tell the difference.
No. When did Natalie Imbruglia get in? I came in once I heard my name. I appeared. I'm like Beetlejuice.
She gets summoned every time somebody says her name.
Yeah. Three times.
Weirdly enough, she hasn't been summoned in 10 years.
Natalie Imbruglia gets summoned.
She keeps waiting for somebody to summon her. This is the first time.
Natalie Imbruglia is only summoned. It's like Beetlejuice, except you've got to say Natalie Dormer, Natalie Portman,
Natalie Imbruglia.
There she
arrives.
Is. Yeah.
Wow, that's so weird. Well, thanks for joining us, Natalie. Yeah, really.
Kiss me. That's what she does, and then she leaves.
All right, bye, Natalie. Thanks for popping along. Okay, so Natalie Imbruglia is the wife, and the husband, I presume, is a CGI creation, but is voiced by...
No, it's just...
Is Nick Cage wrapped up in insulation?
Just like gaffer tape to him. Like, double-sided tape. Like, you can still see him sort of underneath it.
You know, he's wrapped up in it, right?
Yeah.
Because then you've got these scenes where they put big clothes on him and he can't really move that well.
They put a face on him, like they draw one on.
Yeah, like he goes to a formal dinner and he's got this tuxedo on him. And stuff.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Yeah. Like they pull it off. It's a kind of like they've got to make this work.
Yeah.
So Jason Sudeikis goes around with a fruit basket and says, "Hey, we're new to the area." I think this is the wrong way around.
We're the Jasons. I think
this
is right.
We're the Argonauts. Yeah. And hey, he's like, "What's the most irresponsible thing anyone's ever done in this neighborhood?"
Well, let me
deep
what,
cut. Deep
what
cut
a for, dinner question.
Deep cut for Colossal there.
I've seen that movie and I don't even get that reference.
No, yeah. That was...
the most irresponsible thing scene.
I don't know.
Oh, yeah. Where
the firework.
Jason Sudeikis lets rip fireworks inside a bar.
Literally lets rip.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway,
that's gonna be a reference not many people get because not many people have seen that film.
I've seen it.
I've seen it and I completely forgot about that scene.
Jesus, Matt, what's wrong?
I'm the only one here who's seen it twice.
Yeah.
Alright, well done. Yeah. Alright. What does Jason Bateman do?
Jason Sudeikis has come up with the
Jason Sudeikis.
With the basket and
fireworks.
At first, he's like, "Oh, so have we got a husband living in a house? You know, not living. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, it's a weird, weird way to pose that question.
Is it just you?
Have you got a husband living in a house?"
She's like, Yes.
Why? Yes,
actually, my husband, you might say my husband is at the heart of the home.
And Jason,
he's a very warm person, my husband, very comforting.
Yeah. Little
playing a guessing game.
Yeah, yeah. Sort of dropping hints.
But at some point, we've got to get to the itchy part, right?
Yeah, well, my question is, why is she dropping hints if she doesn't want anyone to know?
Yeah.
Why is she doing these bits of dating?
She's just winking at them, the whole time. Like, and they're just like, what?
Oh, she assumes they know already.
Yeah.
Like, she thinks that, like, everybody knows, everybody in the neighborhood knows, but then when she realizes that they don't, because they're new, she realizes it's a chance for her to make a fresh new impression, because for too long she's been tied down as her identity has always been
the
wife of the insulation golem, and she realizes this is the time she can really make some friends that accept her for who she is and not who her weird husband is.
But hang on, because I feel like we want to tell this story from one perspective or the other, and right now we're telling it from Natalie and Brulia's perspective.
I'm okay with
it. It was Natalie and Brulia.
I thought we were going to go with the Argonauts.
With the Argonauts.
Okay, well, what do they do with protagonists? Because at the moment, they just react.
They go to
I feel like these houses, I kind of seeded that these houses that are set apart from everyone sort of make you have to have someone who's part of them.
Okay.
Right, in the background of this, we've got
go on.
Rolling blackouts and power shortages.
Okay.
And lack of natural gas.
What?
We've got to make it so that all the homes and like are cold.
Whoa. Oh shit.
So they all start they all start to freeze.
So when the neighborhood does find out that she has a husband made of insulation foam,
God, they all want to come around.
They all want to tear him apart.
Oh no!
And use him in their house.
Okay, so they find out he's a natural source of insulation.
Yeah,
he keeps growing it.
Yeah.
But like hair, the most living part of the body.
Right, but like I thought the conflict here might arise from like their house as well is part of these two houses.
Okay.
That need something at the heart of them. Way back when, in this sort of like New England sort of spooky haunted house style,
1700s flashback.
Exactly.
Ooh,
an old scientist built these houses, and at the heart of them, he put
played by
Nicolas
Cage in flashback. Like,
okay,
Nicolas Cage again.
Yeah, he played
a different character.
It is.
The same guy.
No,
same guy. He's just immortal.
Well, no, I assume we're going as he made.
Yeah,
the golem.
So he made the golem
in his own image.
In his own image. Yeah.
I am God.
Well, okay.
Creator of the insulation golem.
Remember that it doesn't really matter who plays the insulation golem in this because you can't see Nick Cage's face.
But it's voiced by Nick Cage.
Okay. Yeah.
But Cage's face made out of insulation.
Yeah,
this scientist makes a golem, but
Oscar for prosthetics, right?
In order to make this work, he traps someone at the heart of the golem, which becomes like the spirit of the house, right?
Oh,
the
no.
person who keeps this house going.
Ah, oh, the house themselves.
Yeah,
Michael Sheen.
And Michael Sheen. Is what the house?
Yeah,
that would also make.
Wait, no,
that would also make Michael Sheen the husband.
I only said that because that happened in Doctor Who already.
I didn't get that one.
How about
but like the Argonauts have been wondering why are the electrical and gas bills so low?
Especially in this current climate of natural disasters causing rolling blackouts and cold houses.
But it doesn't happen to these two houses.
Tom, beautifully seeded.
It doesn't happen to these two houses.
They're a safe haven.
They're fine.
It's a first draft,
they've got,
Patrick.
Always got power. They're nice and warm.
Yep.
And they have no gas bills and they can't figure it out.
Yeah.
But then they go over and they realise they start to realise, yeah, that when the husband
I was about
comes
to say
in,
they catch them in the act, but that implies a whole lot of like
when Nick
I don't know if we want to go there.
No, catch him in the act of her just hugging the insulation foam. Ah, this is so warm.
But itchy.
Itchy
as well. Double side of that coin.
Yeah, so they go in and they realise that whenever the husband's there,
yeah,
he's a big guy,
oh, man,
played
yeah.
by Nick Cage.
Sure.
Like all floofed up, he's got big jumpers on all the time. And whenever he walks in the room, the house goes cold.
Mm. It's kind of a suburban drama, right? Because word gets around now. There's gossip about the supporting players are kind of the other families in this neighbourhood, even further away.
Who I've decided don't know about the...
Oh, but they're about to. They're about to start knowing because one of the Jasons, desperate to fit in, Jason Bateman at the local bar, he wants to fit in, and so he accidentally lets slip.
He's a writer, he needs validation.
Well, exactly.
I've got a scene where he's at the bar and he's sat there. It's so quiet. You can hear the clock ticking, and there's no one. Like, there's quite a few people sat at the bar. They're just not having conversations.
Yeah, they're just drinking.
Sort of drinking, like and looking at their drinks and
he
stuff.
He wants to fit
in. And then he, it, like, everything's ticking.
Let me set a scene a bit more. Power goes out.
Oh, yeah. No.
And then just comes back up again, and everyone's in the same position.
Same position.
The same thing. Still nobody's talking because they're used to it.
Yeah.
And it gets faster and faster and faster and faster. He's like, and he slams his fists on the bar and goes, I can't take it anymore. That woman's got insulation golem living up in her attic for her husband.
And everybody goes completely quiet, still looking at their drinks, and then they all slowly look around at him. Wait, what?
No, they all slowly turn to him and go, at the same time, tell me more.
That makes sense, actually.
Yeah.
I see what you mean.
I know, because when it snows, her house is the only one that don't have snow on the roof.
That's the only explanation.
That explains it, they all say.
And yeah. She's always talking about that husband in weirdly specific cryptic remarks.
It says the shopkeeper.
Yeah.
She never buys any
play
any
by
roof
Simon
insulation.
Pegg. Simon Pegg is a shopkeeper.
Yeah. He says, well, they never buy any roof insulation.
Yeah.
He says,
what could it be?
And then Jason Sudeikis is like, because a husband is roof insulation.
But okay, so I kind of feel
you
like
don't
I...
get it, do you? He is roof insulation.
Right. So here's the thing.
Mm.
That this is good. It's gone this way because Jason Bateman is a writer, right? Wants to be a professional. And
he's
just
a columnist. Yeah.
Just happy with the way life is.
Yeah.
Right. Jason Sudeikis wants to start a family. Right. Wants to put down roots.
Mm. Yeah.
Wants to sort of make sure that they can provide for themselves.
Mm.
Whereas Jason Bateman, there's a bit of a fracture in the Argonauts household because Jason Bateman is a bit more of a high-flying, career-driven person, right?
Mm, sure.
So Jason Sudeikis, while Jason Bateman's hanging out with all these people, whipping up this kind of mob, Jason Sudeikis is getting into the point where he wants to become the golem for the house they live in.
Oh, because they need a golem too.
Yeah.
Oh no.
Because they want to have their house warm for their family. Yeah.
So Jason Sudeikis is doing this. The mob's being whipped up into a frenzy.
Yeah.
And Natalie Imbruglia from her window, from the far down this cul-de-sac, she sees this mob beginning to march on them. And so she immediately goes, darling, to Nicolas Cage, we have to do something. We have to figure something out. And Nicolas
While Jason Sudeikis is performing the ritual.
Yeah. And Nicolas
and Nick Cage
says,
Nick Cage at this point just gives up and goes, just let me burn.
No, you're made of asbestos. You're fine.
It'd be awful. He says, I can feel it. There's another one of us. So the mob rush into the house.
Yeah.
They begin tearing Nick Cage bit by bit. And Natalie Imbruglia is singing Torn from the other corner.
You're a little late. He's already torn.
And Natalie Imbruglia distracts them all by saying, "You don't have to steal my husband. There's another one. There's another source of this infinite insulation."
Oh, she's turned him in
the other house.
Fuck!
Everybody goes over to the other house. Jason Bateman sat there on his knees, freaking out because Jason Sudeikis has turned himself into an insulation golem.
Yeah.
And then the mob come in. This mob that Jason Bateman started himself.
And so
it's tragic.
But then suddenly there's a gust of wind, right?
Oh no.
Gust of wind blows in and all these tiny shards of fiberglass whip through the building.
Oh.
All of which, when they zoom in, is a nice CG moment.
Yeah.
All of which have Nick Cage's face on them. Going, ah! And so this wind full of fiberglass spins and spins and spins and just rips. At first, everyone's itching and trying to get it off them.
Yeah.
And then it just rips the skin off the mob.
Oh.
Just moist, like the mob just liquidates them.
Shielding Natalie Imbruglia and Jason Bateman.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, no, Jason Sudeikis has wrapped himself around them, though.
Oh, and they're
keeping
all
them warm and safe.
In fact, the house itself pulls its oaken beams and timbers into to encase them in the middle of this Nick Cage storm.
Yeah,
as the power of the golem long ago, 1700s golem, is expended, and Nick Cage sacrifices himself to destroy the mob.
The bones of the mob fall to the ground, and the Nick Cage storm finally subsides. All these pieces of fiberglass go flying out the window, which smashes the houses in pieces.
Yeah.
It's all completely destroyed, and we look up.
Smashes the one house.
We pan up to the night sky and we see the moon, and Nick Cage's face just appears in fiberglass over the moon, smiling before fading.
That's a pretty good climax to a film.
And in the end, because Jason, the Argonauts want to start a family, and there's Natalie Imbruglia just left there. He goes, "We're looking for a surrogate mother."
Jesus. And that's how it ends.
Credits.
I figured they would just adopt, but you know, we didn't have to make it a thing.
I mean, it folds back in. I mean, it folds back in. Natalie Imbruglia is now, you know, like, she needs a per... Oh, Christ, I wasn't going to... No, never mind.
She needs a golem. Yeah. She hasn't got anywhere to live.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's also true. Both of their houses are fucked.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Well, no, I would say that the one house, the Nicolas Cage house, is fucked.
Why wouldn't they both be fucked?
Because Jason Sudeikis is there. He is the golem now.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay. And so now there's this just creepy, broken-down house that none of them go nearby.
Yeah.
Oh,
it's
dear.
Just, no, it's just ruined, because it was Nick Cage's soul that was the house.
Okay.
Mm. Cut to credits. Colorblind by Darius.
Why?
I like that song.
Colorblind.
Yep. Sounds like a Natalie Imbruglia song, but isn't.
All right.
Either that or Kiss Me by Natalie Imbruglia.
You're too late. He's already torn.
Is Kiss Me done by Natalie Imbruglia?
I think so, but probably, wouldn't be certain enough to say.
Imbruglia.
Imbruglia. Oh, no.
No, yeah. Kiss Me is by Natalie Imbruglia.
Torn, however, is not.
Torn is, yeah.
Okay, we got
it right. As is Wrong Impression, a song nobody's heard.
And Shiver, another song nobody's heard. Oh, Natalie Imbruglia.
Well,
we've got a career.
Thank you, Natalie
Imbruglia,
for those classic songs, and thank you, listeners, for listening to our podcast.
Yes, and thank you, My Waste of Talent, for that title.
Yeah.
What a seed.
Well, that was quite something.
Yeah.
Remember to go over to our socials, Facebook and Twitter. I just removed the RE from that.
Remember to check out our Patreon.
Remember, go to Plot Bubble.
Plotbubble.com, innit?
Plotbubble.com.
Yeah, we started a new season of The Beacon Broadcast, our show about the anime Ruby. You can come and listen to that. I'm on that too.
If you like Ruby from all the creators of Red vs. Blue.
We do a show about that as well.
If you like Rooster Teeth, that sort of stuff, Achievement Hunter part of that. We
also do shows that aren't about Rooster Teeth as well.
Okay, then go over there and have a look, because they have some top quality podcasting.
Mm-hmm.
All right, guys.
So,
there is such a thing as overselling it.
Yeah, well. We are masters of the oversell.
Should go to plotbubble.com. That's P for Peter.
Plotbubble.com.
L for lubricant.
Gumflubble.com.
O for obtuse.
Plopple.com.
T for Tom. That's me.
Plopple.com.
B for bastards.
Secretescapes.com.
U for ultimate. B again for bubble. B again for bubble. L for lost. And E for ET.
BBC.co.uk/news.
Dot for Dot Cotton from EastEnders. C for com as in dot com. O for obtuse again.
BrokenKnees.com.
And M for Matthew. That's you!
AOL keyword Stannis Tear Lifts.
Plotbubble.com. Go there for plotbubble.com.
Jesus Christ. We go to plotbubble.com. We have podcasts shorter than that bit.
So yeah, go to plotbubble.com because it's really good. It's really, really good.
And anyway, go to soundcloud.com/lifesapitchshow. L
podcast,
for
oh no,
L for life's,
L for let's not do this,
I for the
L for let's just stop,
L for life's, I for
no,
I've's.
No.
F for face.
No, don't do it.
E for
as a pitch. Anyway, Patrick, thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you guys for having me.
I hope we haven't disturbed you too much.
Well, yes, you have. But
okay, well,
at this point, there's nothing I can do.
We've all made mistakes. And
mistakes were made.
Thank you all for listening. I have been Matt Turner.
I've been Tom McGrath.
I've been Patrick Lickman.
And until you are asked to become the centre of your household, quite literally, remember who pitched it.
Bye!
Bye!
B for bye.
Y for yeah.
And E for E.T.
E for E! Magazine.